Welcome to Beyond the Buzz with Brendan Osborne. In each episode, we dive deep with high-performing entrepreneurs, world-class athletes, and those whose existence make this world a better place. They walk the walk, they talk the talk, have knowledge through experience, and let their success make the noise. Thanks for joining us today. It's time to reach your potential.
This is episode number one with Dave Eddy. Thanks for joining me today, everyone. I brought on a good friend and an old friend, Dave Eddy. And what we're going to go through today, we tap into outsourcing, which Dave has done fantastically, not only in his work life, but also personal life, to the point where he has someone doing his groceries for him. So we're going to dive into that, and also around being your most authentic self. So there's not many people that can act and be their self as much as Dave does, so he'll dive into that a little bit. Thanks for joining me today, and let's hop into it. Good evening, everyone. It's Brendan Osborne here. And for our episode today, I've brought on a very special guest, and it's a good friend of mine by the name of David Eddy. How are we doing today, David?
Doing pretty well, Brendan. Pretty well.
So to kick off, we'd want to move in the direction. We've known each other for a long time. And I want to definitely get into where you're at business-wise, personally, success-wise, and we kicked off that really by me giving you a success book called Dream High. That was about 6 years ago now, 7 years ago.
Was it you that gave me the book? Or that's not how I remember it.
Okay.
But I do have a poor memory, so
okay.
I'll give you that one.
So we'll say that 6 years ago, we've known each other even before that, but let's, if you can give the audience a bit of a rundown of what you currently do career-wise.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So I run a digital marketing firm here in Newcastle, Australia. We help businesses do marketing on the web, on search engines. We do a lot of Facebook advertising, email marketing, that sort of thing. Basically lead generation stuff for small, medium businesses and also some quite large corporations. But we focus on localized marketing. So that's my core business, and I'm also in a startup called, as you know, called Campify, which is like Airbnb for caravans. So I look after the marketing there, which is going really well. It all keeps me pretty busy.
And that's taken off right now?
It's taken off, yeah. We're, we raised some funding mid-last year, mid-2015, and we've built the business, just released a new website and booking system, getting lots of traction, lots of users, and it's fun. It's a good space to be in.
Very good. And it's a massive amount of things to be involved in at the moment, so you must be pretty stoked about that.
Some days.
I want to tap, pull back a little bit on that. And in the time I've known you, you have appeared to make a massive progression. Tell me a little bit about, before I gave you that book 6 years ago or whatever other coaching things that you've been through.
Pretty much just that book.
and all the work that you've put in. What, had to change in your psychology or your perspective, or was it just an eventual thing that happened?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you. I feel a bit awkward about being positioned as a super successful person. You know, I'm really happy with where I'm at and where I'm headed. So that's cool. But I think, a big part of the growth and where I'm at today is the people I surround myself with. Definitely you being one, and people that give me books on positivity, was it? I grew up in a small country town. I had a great upbringing. With, you know, loving family and stuff. I've been really fortunate in that sense. But I think where it really took off from a career perspective after uni was investing in some personal coaching for a few years and just really chasing some answers around like how I can grow and be better and stuff. And the real probably core learning that I think has helped me get to where I am today and where I'm headed is just understanding that I'm responsible for everything that happens. and I get to choose everything that happens, and just a really strong core belief that everything that happens, even if it feels uncomfortable or bad at the time, is actually happening for me, not to me, which I think is a super powerful concept to grasp.
Absolutely. And taking that responsibility, the only thing you can either do is, I guess, dwell in it or take action and keep moving forward.
That's right. Yeah. And it's a perspective thing too. So, you know, if you wake up and get to enjoying that beer, that's what, your first beer in 6 months?
It is. Yeah. We're actually enjoying, we're doing this interview at David's apartment in Newcastle. And we're doing this, we've just had some dinner and we're grabbing a beer. So it's been a long time coming. But
Brendan's not much of a drinker, but I wouldn't say that about me. So what was the question?
That's okay. Really acknowledging your own, I guess, or taking responsibility for yourself is massive. What, through the coaching, through the development, through the programs, mm-hmm. what were a couple of things that you feel or that you identified were holding you back?
Probably just sort of not really having a strong reason to want to grow or develop, and getting a little bit complacent and lazy. And it sounds stupid, but I have always been a really happy person ever since I was a kid. I don't ever remember not being very happy and confident and great self-esteem. And what can happen when you're wired like that, I guess, is like everything feels okay, and I would get to a point where I'm like, well, I really would like something to motivate me either negatively or positively, but I'm really happy with where I am. And so that's not such a bad thing. Like, it's a great thing, but I found it really difficult to really find a reason to be motivated to get up and do my own business. I've always had, you know, well-paying jobs and cruised through them fairly easily. So it was about just finding a passion and finding a real desire to want to create cool stuff, and not just settle and realize my full potential. Because what I realize is, you know, I'm really happy and I'm cruising through and I could do this for the rest of my life, but am I wasting my potential? Am I going to get to 50 or 60 and go, whoa, I could have done so much more? So that was probably it for me.
And if you got to that point, you hit 50, you hit 60, and you're faced with, I guess, mediocrity in a way, how would that feel and how do you turn that into pain?
Well, I'm not sure, because it's a long way away and it's never going to happen now. But and I guess I didn't want to make it, or I don't want to make any decision out of fear or from fear. So it wasn't a kind of negative reinforcement thing for me to go, oh shit, what if I get the 50? But at the same time, I looked at that and I was like, well, it'd be a real shame, because I felt like I had a lot to give, and a lot of talent in certain things, and, you know, a lot of opportunity that a lot of other people don't have. And if there's one thing I learned from my grandma in particular is gratitude, and to be grateful for what you do have and what you can do, and, you know, the country we live in and stuff. And yeah, I just felt the need to sort of make the most of that and help other people along the process.
I think that's really cool, because
do you?
Nowadays we get, I guess, ingrained with so much fear-driven stuff. Also that you need to be in this real painful place to actually pull yourself out. We're constantly hit by like success stories of people that have come from whatever, the lowest lows, or overcome the biggest challenges. Mm-hmm. And even though that's amazing, sometimes it doesn't resonate with everyone. Sometimes it's harder. Well, I wouldn't say harder. It's different to come from a place of comfort, because you actually have to create that drive.
Yeah, it's a really good point you raised there. Like, I remember going to Unleash the Power Within, Tony Robbins' event. Have you been to that?
I have, yes.
You have? Yeah, you've been to it.
Not Unleash, I went to a Success Summit.
Got it. We went there. Yeah. So when I went to, this is an example, Tony does this thing where he gets everyone all in state and psyched up and the NLP stuff, and he gets the room dark and asks everybody to bring up their deepest, darkest fears and their limiting beliefs and their you know, guilt and all this stuff from past. And that's great, like, because a lot of people have that, and it's limiting their success and their progress. I remember being in the room, like, trying to get into that state and trying to just, I'm thinking, what is there? Surely there's something that I can feel some pain around. But there just wasn't. Like, so, well, either I'm really fortunate or I'm just missing it and there is something holding me back, but I don't think so. So I think it's right, well, not right, but I think it's interesting what you said, because I don't think motivation has to come from pain or multiple failures and, you know, you have to learn by failing. Yes, you learn by failing, but if you have the choice to learn by progress and winning and succeeding, then you probably would. And so I think it's a really interesting point you say there. And a lot of people can get hooked on you know, get, like, really attached to this idea that they have to have some pain to get somewhere or have a big failure to actually do anything worthwhile.
And absolutely. And we get driven again with the thought that you have to fail. And it's got nothing to do with the failure, just how you react to it. So if you can react better to success,
yeah,
why not choose that?
And what's failure too? Because failure to one person might mean just, you know, losing one deal in the whole year, and they wanted 100% closure rate or something, and they didn't get it, and it's the worst thing in the world. But to them, that's a big failure. Failure to another person could be building up a multi-billion-dollar business and losing everything.
Yeah,
you know, it's all absolutely. It's all the scale.
So just in line with, I guess, the Tony Robbins workshops, and I know a lot of people that go through that process, and there's some awesome content in there. There is a lot of buzz in there too, and people do come out pretty buzzed up, and then they don't necessarily get a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. Just with your business, I know that, well, it would, even though you're working in the online space, you're working with real people, and it's face-to-face, and there's looking after, and it's engaging. So what I'd call a tangible business.
Yeah.
Where I'm trying to shift with this is that, what do you think the benefits are to having a tangible business, whether you, versus just being, like, in the buzz, like what you see online, what you see in social media, or having really a core-driven business that's tangible?
That's a really interesting question. It's funny because I think you know the answer, but you just want to share it with the audience in my words, I guess. But so being in the digital marketing sort of world, like, we're entrenched in, you know, what social media does and influences behavior and search engines and God knows what apps. You can get lost in perception, and perception is reality in a way, if you look at it from that perspective. So, so I think at the end of the day, like, to me, a real business, you know, it's a really broad question, but it's delivering a service or a product that solves a need, and you're doing that based on really, really knowing your customer and your persona. So, for me, like, the connection with clients, and it, whether it's over the phone or in person or whatever, by email or whatever type of business you have, like, to me, a business is like serving the people that you set out to serve with a really creative solution or product that you've built and worked towards, and you get satisfaction out of delivering it and growing it and getting it to more people or the right people. To me, like, that's my sort of definition of an awesome business, which is like what we're doing with Camplify is awesome. The sharing economy thing and helping caravan owners earn money from their caravan that's just sitting on the lawn, for example. It's a new thing. It's really cool. We're changing people's financial situations, their lives. We're helping people get on holidays. That, to me, like, obviously the money side of things is very relevant. But to me, it's not the money. It's like what you can then do with that money to create something else. So, if I won the lotto tomorrow, if I won $1 million tomorrow, I would just whack it straight into creating something bigger and better. I wouldn't be buying a nicer lounge than this one or anything like that.
Do you play the lotto?
The lotto? Nah. So I probably won't win that one.
It's funny that you said no, because I actually have a similar rule, and I made that when I was about 18, that I would never buy a lotto ticket, because that would pretty much I gave up. On creating that sort of money myself, so
yeah, I don't think it would feel fulfilling. It's kind of like a hooker, right? it's not a real relationship. It's not something that you've earned. It's just bought.
Okay, I think that's a perfect segue into where I want to head, because anyone who's dealt with you you're dealing with people who are running businesses, doing multi millions of dollars, and just numerous people, but you never shift away from your authentic self. And for some reason, you get away with it. So I don't know, and I always say this to most people, if I acted the way you acted, I'd probably be in jail. But everyone accepts it because it is truly authentic. Is that something that you have to just keep yourself aware of, or is it something that you just naturally are blocked off to trying to shift into any other personas, or what do you do there?
I need to be aware of it. Like, I'm very aware that, like, sometimes my personality is a bit too maybe big for some people, or a bit too in your face or offensive, or it's the way I was brought up. It feels very real to me. I'm respectful of people, but sometimes it doesn't come across that way. I think 99% of the time I get away with it, because people just, people just understand that I'm being myself and I'm respecting them in a way. It's just a little bit different to what you might see. And, I would just feel restricted, and like I wasn't being myself if I didn't swear here and there and, crack jokes and take the piss and muck around constantly. Yeah. Yeah, does that kind of answer your question?
It does. I want to go a little bit back to the start where we were.
When are we going to talk about your personality, by the way?
that's a different podcast, and hopefully we'll get that through. So I want to know what a day looks like for yourself. Like, you work 10, 12, 13, 15-hour days.
Is this working?
This is working.
Cool.
16-hour day today. So this is working.
Let's post it online and tell everybody.
And that's what I want to also bring in. Like, it's a modest work that is in line with your service, and you just do what you need to do, and then the success from your work really makes a noise for you. It's not about you telling anyone, and it's what you're saying about yourself, just being happy and excited. You're not looking for attention in any of these things. Like, we never see you doing stuff about hustling or 4 a.m. starts, or if it's a 4 a.m. Image or content from yourself, it's funny. Like, you just being stupid at 4 a.m. Just being yourself at 4 a.m. You're not trying to get recognition for your actions to prove to yourself that you are doing the right thing. So stay in line with, I guess, I gave it like the 4 a.m. starts, but what's a typical day look like for yourself?
Yeah, typical day is a 4 a.m. start. 4:11, because I'm OCD.
Yeah.
And 11's my favorite number. So that's really weird. I have all my clothes set out for me, and all my meals I get prepped for me and stuff, and juices and stuff. So all that's ready to go. I just literally walk out.
So backfill a little bit there. Like, you have all your stuff organized?
Yep. Yeah. And on this couch, it's my shoes, my undies, my jeans, my clothes for the next day. So I literally get up straight, sleep nude. Of course. So I don't have to get changed, saves time. Shower, straight out into my clothes, and literally I can be out the door in like 12, 13 minutes. The only other thing I do just before I leave is I have a little journal or a diary that I fill out each morning and night.
Yep.
It's just a few things that I'm grateful for that morning, and a few things I want to achieve for the day.
And is that handwritten? Are you typing?
It's handwritten, yeah. It's a little book. I tried the digital thing, and I used to write it on a whiteboard and take photos, but for some reason, even though I'm in the digital marketing space, it just doesn't feel the same.
Something special about it? The writing?
Yeah, my handwriting is pretty special. So, thanks.
And the meals, you said someone prepares meals? Them?
Yeah, so I'm super lazy, as you know. I'm not very domesticated. I just despise spending more than 5 minutes doing anything domesticated. So, you know, some people spend their money on clothes and, you know, cars and stuff. I spend my money on having someone help me do the cleaning, cooking, meal prep. So
even get your groceries for you, is that right? You get someone to get your groceries
She's an awesome lady, and she loves to help out and just sort of helps me with that stuff. So I can, you know, I feel like, and I've done the maths, if you spend an hour a day doing stuff that's not really connected to your purpose or where you're going or where you're headed, that hour a day sort of adds up to 365 hours a year, which is a lot of time.
Yeah.
Doing stuff that isn't really, and I know some people find it meditative, if that's a word, therapeutic. I don't. I find it annoying and frustrating because I'm so impatient. But so it's that. Into the office by, you know, my office is like a minute drive
again
away.
And I'm getting the thing here. It's convenience.
Like, yeah. I've structured my life to be like.
And how far is your office away?
It's 130 metres.
130 metres. So we're in an apartment in Newcastle right now. And do you walk or do you drive there? What do you do?
You know how I get to work.
You drive to work from your apartment.
It's up a very steep hill.
It's like a very steep hill. Okay, cool. So,
and the reason why is because it's paid parking down the bottom. And also a little bit maybe because I'm lazy.
Yep.
So yeah, get to work, into the office, hook into a coffee usually, make up a green juice and just, yeah.
Are you blending that yourself or fresh?
Nutri Ninja, they're all frozen. They're prepped for me and they're frozen. So straight in into the blender.
Cool.
I just love that first few hours of the day when no one's around, there's no phone calls, it's serene. I've got either a podcast or some music, like getting into like world music and acoustic stuff rock and whatever. And then just hook into the day, and my team gets into the office at about 8 or 9, and that's really cool. And we go see clients or whatever, and then it's personal training after work at this, forget the name of the personal training studio. It's not very well known. It's a little bit,
So he's referring to WellFit Personal Training, which is a company that I am co-owner of.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few studios in the area, so it's very good of you to come to that studio.
It's awesome. It's great. It's, yeah.
Really cool vibe. So just throughout the day, and this is just, I'm just curious, if you're in a social media space, like it's the most distracting world in the world.
Yeah.
World in the world, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
What do you do? And I know, just even knowing you, like you have seemed to be more focused mm-hmm. as time has gone on.
Yeah.
What do you have in place? Do you have software or are you using different things online to,
mm-hmm.
I guess, collect content? Or are you blocking things? What are you doing there?
In terms of personal usage, I literally put my phone on Do Not Disturb between all hours except for between 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. because the rest of it's my fresh mind time and it's just so distracting, which is...
And I have gotten your voicemail. What's your voicemail say?
Anyway.
No, the ones about being bad at responding.
Oh, yeah. It just says I'm bad at... I'm not that great at responding to voicemails, so just shoot me a text because...
That's awesome.
Yeah, because it just... It takes you off course for the day. I feel like that. So, so social media, like I'm pretty active on it. Like I'm, but it's in downtime, like 5 minute breaks. So I just jump on or I'm on the toilet. That's a good one. and so it probably seems to, you know, the naked eye that I'm on it all the time,
mm-hmm.
but it's just really short, sharp breaks throughout the day. And it's like my Facebook feed's full of marketing and, you know, tech stuff. It's not really a bit of fun stuff. But so I see Facebook's my favorite channel, and I see that as a news resource. It's where I follow all my blogs and stuff like that.
So I see, you know, taking in news, taking in information, but also doing majority of your work through that. It seems to be a go-to point now. If anyone's starting a business, trying to get themselves out there, it can be free if you use it well. And also there's paid versions and not too expensive compared to, I guess, traditional advertising. How much time do you think people are spending the right amount of time? So I know people that start up, they might be doing some sort of freelance work or whatever it may be, and it's pretty much, it used to be print a business card, but now it's set up a Facebook page. Do you think people are giving that too much energy, or do you think that that should be the first place they go versus, I guess, traditional, like meeting people, networking?
Well, I guess it's a case-by-case basis, and it's a broad question, but...
Let's say startup, pretty good experienced person, or they have a high skill level, don't really know marketing, don't really... no social media metrics, they use it personally, and no funding.
Right. So yeah, it depends what kind of business, and as we sort of talked about before, about the real business versus a perception online business, you know. So if you're an accountant and you're a one man band, yes, there's value in definitely building up your Google rankings and doing Google AdWords to get traffic to your website, and there's value in advertising on your content and your knowledge via a phone that costs nothing, video, and you spitting out what you know about and what talks to your ideal persona or your ideal customer. So yes, there's all that, but it's a case by case basis. So if you're that accountant, if that was me, I probably wouldn't even be starting right from the start with social media or digital marketing. I would be looking at relationships in my local area, so, and trying to build referral partnerships, because that's going to be your best base. On the flip side, if you're a business that say is very different to an accountant, like a personal trainer, so we know from experience that WellFit has built itself off initially in the early days Google. It was just all Google. If there's people searching for your stuff on Google, then which you can find out pretty easily, then it's perfect, because there's just a screaming market of people who are typing in, "I want what you do," and you just got to get in front of them. It's a bit more complicated than that, but so that would be a focus. And then social media, as you mentioned, the targeting capabilities on Facebook in particular are just insane. And yes, you can get lots of reach and lots of exposure on that channel to the right type of demographics and people who have been to your site before, and people who have certain interests and stuff like that. And it's really not that hard to get going. So to answer your question, like it is a case by case basis, but you really just got to think, who is my customer? What do they want? And where are they hanging out? So if it's Facebook, get on Facebook and pump out your content and show them who you are and what you know and how you can help.
And sorry to cut you off there, when you say persona, so to someone out there who's starting a business, it's common to go, but what's a persona?
A persona? So a persona is your ideal. If you think about, if I've got this store, whether it's an online store or a bricks and mortar or a phone that people are inquiring on, if I could choose the exact type of person that's going to contact me and want to do business with me, who is it? And who's likely to buy my particular products, pay the most for them, be the most pleasant to deal with, and anything that I want out of a business relationship, who's that person? So for Campify, for example, which is a caravan sharing site, it's a marketplace that where we're looking for people that want to hire caravans from our owners, listed owners, who we're looking for more of those people to list their caravans. But we've learned that our target persona isn't just anyone that has a caravan to list, because we're really looking for a person who's probably got a family, they're probably married, they're already a homeowner because they buy the home, then the caravan. They get, they're probably a business owner, or a school teacher or something, someone with a bit of spare time. Business owner especially, because they get customer service. So if they're going to list their caravan on our site, then and they're serious about it, and they're going to see it as an investment to earn money from, then that's going to give our hirers, people who come to our site looking for caravans, a better experience, because when they contact the owner, they're going to get back to them quickly, be polite, have a bottle of wine and whatever, waiting with the caravan, and really just give them great customer service. So as opposed to just any caravan owner who isn't taking the service seriously or isn't really committed to giving a good customer service. So that's kind of an example of the persona that we've built for our business on that side, and really understanding like the exact type of person that we want to be doing business with, because it's going to benefit us and them in the long run.
And you just create a story around that and then pretty much direct your marketing at that story, and then that will pick up those types of people.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you mentioned there the targeting within Facebook and also the Google advertising, things that may not be, I guess, super complicated, but still they're hard. And there's a lot of changing things all the time. You have to really be on the pulse of it to know what's going on, because by the time you learn it, or what you learned 12 months ago isn't relevant anymore.
Yeah.
To someone who's not in that field, those things are potentially things that could be outsourced.
Yeah.
And from my personal opinion, I think majority of the time you should try to outsource it. Mm-hmm. I like personally to have an understanding of each area, but again, you can't be an expert in every single area. You really need to stick to your services, especially starting off. If you're an accountant and you shift into media, you stop accounting, then that's going to be where your bread and butter is.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line. Yeah.
Yeah. So finding that knowledge and that fine line, but outsourcing, and I know you have staff here in Newcastle, but also overseas staff and outsource out overseas. What's your thoughts about that? Obviously, it works for you, but is it a hard thing to get into? How do you navigate that? How did you find the right people? I know I've had both ends of the scale where I've found people that are terrible to communicate with, and it might not even be terrible, it's just different language barriers.
Yeah.
Trying to really work this different systems to make them do the right thing.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I've got other people that do amazing work and just seem to get it. What would your tips be around that?
Around offshoring. So, it really depends on what type of business you have and what tasks and systems and stuff that you have to outsource. For some businesses, there might be literally nothing within their business that they feel they can outsource. But for most businesses...
What if we went to, say, like even website design, graphic design, not ongoing, but just a startup?
Yeah, so I've found, and I've, similar to you, I've had great experiences with offshoring and a few poor ones as well.
Which you have here as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I've found it's no different to, especially with the internet and Skype and, Google Hangouts and email and, all the cloud-based stuff we have to communicate. It's no different to hiring people and resources locally. It depends on the task as to what you can offshore and what you can't. So you mentioned design. Design differs by country. Like the idea of good design and modern design, I find seems to be different. Even in the States and Canada, it's a different sort of look and feel to maybe what you'd expect in Australia. But it just depends on the task at hand, and it really I think the keys, the successes we've had with building a team in the Philippines, who are just awesome. Like they're the most coolest, just really warm, loving, like reliable people that you could ever meet, the guys that we work with. And
where do you find those people?
Yeah, I was pretty thorough about the interview process. So we used a website called onlinejobs.ph.
Yep.
Wrote a very detailed job description. I was just starting out, so I was just looking at hiring one assistant to help with SEO and digital marketing sort of tasks, that the more mundane sort of some of the technical tasks that I didn't have time for, and then held I think 7 or 8 Skype interviews in an afternoon, and really loved. Oh, I said a trial task for 3 or 4 of the candidates, and really loved 2 of those, and loved their work on the trial task. It was just a website audit.
So yeah.
If they could do what they said they could do.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so that worked really well, and I just decided to hire Mary and Si who you've met, Si.
I have met Si. He's very cool.
So, and they're awesome. And that's how we got started. So there's websites like Upwork and freelancer.com and stuff like that, where you can find really good quality talent and resources for, yes, it's like a fraction of the cost of hiring in Australia, but really, really talented people. And you just need to put in the effort and treat them like they deserve to be treated and put in the time and effort. Training, we're huge on training, processes, systems and stuff. So it's like any employee, you can't just expect them to know how to do stuff. You got to kind of...
Which is interesting that you say that, and it's not even coming from, I guess, a bad point or an ungrateful point, but when you do hire people online, you for some reason you just assume they can do what they can do.
Yeah.
When if someone came and walked into your office physically, you would test them out. You would give them small little things. Hey, just edit this one thing and then we'll move you forward. But then it's almost like a big unload. I think it's a pressure built up by business owners that they put that online. Unload, and that comes through their communication as well. And a good point there, which was really cool, which I'm sure a lot of people don't do in online hiring, is give them a task, give them something to actually do before you hire them.
Yeah.
And I know that I haven't done that. Yeah. I've always just put a proposal through and said, "Can you do this?" And they said yes, so that I just pretty much kicked them off. And then they're halfway through it, you figure out they can't do it. You have to.
Yeah, you can't say contract. You can't send them an email saying, "I want a green website," and just expect them to come up with something that you exactly what you want, because it's subjective. But you know, the other thing about offshoring is I find a great deal of satisfaction in or hiring anybody, and you know, and helping develop anybody, and you know, just like clients do for us, they put food on our plate. You're helping other people grow their families and their business and their lives and stuff, and do what they want to do. And I found with offshoring, the guys that we work with, they're just so much, I wouldn't say more grateful than local staff, but they're just, you can tell that they really, really appreciate having a job and having a boss that has faith in them, and doesn't just treat them as cheap labor and another number.
Yeah.
I've found there's huge satisfaction of that thing alone.
And that comes back to being that authentic self all the time. I've seen you with your guys and you're on Google Hangouts or I think it was Skype, and you're all just joking and hanging around and they're doing the same thing.
Oh, we stuff around. It's just...
Yeah, so I've never ever seen that where someone's got staff from overseas and it's their second language, yet you can still have a really good time and joke around, and they're having fun, but they're doing really good work as well. Yeah. So that's super cool.
Sometimes I think we screw around too much, but then I think, nah, this is fun.
Okay. So what I want to end with today, we were having a bit of a conversation before the podcast started around your university. What did you do at university?
I did a Bachelor of Business Marketing and Psychology.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like it's super relevant to what we're talking about, but when we broke it down a little bit, you did say that pretty much there's the bare minimum of what you do now actually correlates with what you learned about before. I know, and I've talked to so many people around this recently, and I really just want to hear your thoughts on it. There's people now that are around that 24, 25, 26, 27, and even a little bit later, that are in careers that they made a decision about when they were 17.
Yeah.
And they're holding on to it for the fact that they just dedicated 3 or 4 years.
I don't want to waste the last 5 years.
Yeah, I don't want to waste that years, but yet I'm willing to waste the next 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
How did you, I guess, just keep moving away from it and seeing, playing things for what they were and in front of you and just going in whatever direction you are now?
Well, the degree that I did really... when I came out of it, it's not like, a doctor's degree or something that you have to finish to actually practice in that space.
It's a good luck degree.
Yeah, it's a good luck degree. It's like, and yeah, literally, I learned a lot of stuff at uni, but not at uni, not teaching stuff. I literally, if you asked me to write down a sheet of paper on what I learned at uni, I wouldn't be able to. I don't recall much of it. I was pretty drunk, most of it. I think that even that's 8, 9 years ago. And I think it's even shifted more since then. And I think now, especially in the business marketing sort of space, like I just don't really feel like a lot of uni degrees are worth it. And I think that it's all at our fingertips on Udemy and, you know, learning from blogs and just picking a niche and following the people who are good at that thing, listening to podcasts like Brendan Osborne's. And
so what would you give that person, that mid-20s person who just is really struggling to let go of, but on a deeper level they know that that's not who they are or what they want to do?
I would say don't regret it, but yeah, just grow some balls, you know, and or if they're a chick, they probably can't do that, but I would just tell them to be grateful for what they have learnt throughout that and see what they can apply out of that to the next step and figure out, okay, what do you want to specialise in, what do you really want to do, and then get on Google and find out who's the experts and start following them and start practicing it. Give away your services for free when you're starting out. Like I remember I started building WordPress websites and doing SEO for friends, businesses and companies and stuff with no money. And just because I couldn't wait to get into it, I just wanted to practice it and get better at it. And I think, you know, if you're 24, 25, that's, you still got heaps of time. Like we're probably going to live till 200 if, you know, with bionic hearts and whatever happening. So, just let it go. Let it go and move forward would be my suggestion. My wise words.
Yeah, well, grow a set and just, see it for what it was and not try to hold on to it and wreck the rest of your life. Just
yeah, and I think that's important. Like so many people get act their whole lives based on holding on to something from their past. And I've never seen the sense in that. I've never found it hard to let go of stuff. And you know, it's really sad that some people are still, we all act how we act because of our development and you know, factors that have helped us grow. But some people, you know, have limiting beliefs because of something that's happened to them or something they've done. They feel guilt, shame, or they don't feel like they're smart enough or whatever, which is a shame. So, that's it for that.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, where can anyone check you out? I know you've got a blog. You've obviously got your digital marketing company. And then where's the best place for people to find you?
Can I ask you this question too? The Google Images, you know them. just on, well, Vicinity Marketing on Facebook. You can just search that on Facebook or Instagram. You can get me at... where can you get me?
And you're launching a podcast
shortly. We haven't even named it yet.
For businesses in local
markets? It's for businesses. It's for businesses that want to learn all the different ways to market, mainly digital marketing.
Yep.
All the different methods and strategies. More focused around location-based marketing. So not just local businesses, small businesses. It is that.
But big businesses also targeting a certain area.
Yeah, so multi-location, you know, we just help Brisbane Airport with a campaign launching the Air Canada service, for example, and that's, well, you wouldn't call that a local business,
Airport Corp. But it's in a specific area.
But it was very focused. We were very focused around reaching a certain target market in the Queensland area, and specifically Canadian expats and things like that. So it's something that I think a lot of big companies miss, like big franchises. They're good at the overall marketing strategy at head office, but they're not necessarily reaching the customers how they could in localized markets. So there's a podcast, and anyone, if you have questions or anything like that, you can hit me up at dave@vicinity.marketing. Fancy domain.
Very good. Well, David, good.
Wait, I've got a question for you. Is that okay?
Yep, question back.
Okay. Cool. So this is the first of many podcast episodes for you.
Yes. And
thank you. Thanks for having me on board.
That's pretty right. Pumped first about guess.
It. I'm pretty pumped. Can you just, I'm really curious as to what you want to get out of the podcast.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there's a couple of levels. For me, it is really about reaching out and connecting with people like yourself and also people that I don't know yet. Typically, I'm very introverted and I don't reach out. I don't reach out naturally, but anytime I seem to put a business filter on these things, whether it be sales or a purpose behind it, it's quite easy for me to ask these types of things and do that. And ultimately, I want to get down to a deeper level with people beyond the buzz.
Yeah.
So I want to connect and get people like yourself who actually have runs on the board and have lessons through experience. Mm. They're not just regurgitating the latest information that we hear and there's no depth to it. I want to know about the underlying, I guess, drive and what you've learned in that experience and how you operate.
Yeah, cool.
Rather than just like that surface level. So that's my main purpose for this, but
nice.
Looking forward to
it. You're about to go on a journey. You're going to learn a lot. Cool. Well, I'm proud of you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm proud of you too.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And thanks for your time today.
Pleasure.
This has been Beyond the Buzz with Brendan Osborne. Thanks for listening.